Call meeting to order, 6 o'clock. First order in the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Motion to approve the agenda?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. Approval of minutes from the last meeting. Hope everybody's had a chance to review them. I didn't have any changes, any discussion? Hearing none, motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Got a second? Second, Mr. Wilson? Motion carried. Huh?
Did we vote?
Oh, that's right. All in favor?
I missed something.
That's all right. Thank you, Jim.
Gotta quit this sleeping shit.
I had two votes, I don't know about you. Declaration of correspondence, any correspondence report?
MAA or anything else we gotta?
All right. Branding initiative update, that's gonna be Jim tonight.
All right. I will let Melody do most of the talking, but.
Pass the buck.
Last week, the county council approved changing the name of the airport to Delaware Coastal Airport. So it's officially named that right now. We're still waiting to hear from the FAA, not for their approval, but just to know whether they're actually gonna make the changes on their documents. You know, our official records and approach plates and everything else that it's on. As soon as we get that, we're gonna move ahead with a whole bunch of stuff that Melody's gonna talk to you about. Officially, the name has been changed, and we're in kind of a fuzzy transition period right now.
Any idea of what the new identifier will be?
We haven't addressed the identifier, still GED. You know, somewhere down the road, that's our intention, is to change that. You know, we own the airport, they own the identifier, so changing the name of the airport is really easy. Changing the name of the identifier is a little bit harder. Actually, it's a lot harder.
Because we have to. It's just every database around the world.
Yeah, and basically, you know, the FAA orders say, you know, once you have a three-letter identifier, it's yours forever unless you can give us a good reason, safety-wise especially, why it needs to be changed. So we're gonna work on making that case when the time comes, but there's plenty to work on right now with just changing the name. I think changing the identifier at the same time is gonna confuse too many people anyway.
Flagler just did it, and their identifier.
Who did?
Flagler, down north of Daytona, down Palm Coast.
It happens. I mean, if you read the FAA stuff, you would think it never happens, but I know it happens all the time, so.
Did anyone introduce themselves? Well, I don't know everybody at the table. Were introductions made earlier?
No.
You're a member of the public, so.
Okay.
I am. I'm a member of what?
Well, anyway, my name is Melody Volker-Wilson, and I'm the Director of Economic Development for Sussex County. And essentially, I mean, last week was a big deal. I mean, we had, you know, four days to one day. And to us, that is a resounding success. So essentially, 10 years of all the major investments that have been made at this airport, for a federal delegation, state and county, now it's time to tell our story. And what I'll share is that while this airport will still remain Georgetown Airport, Sussex County Airport, you know, for us here locally, but for us to take the airport to the next level, we really need to look outside of this market area. So that's how we came up with, and this was again, recommendations from consultants and from the Airport Advisory Committee and a lot of shareholders for the Delaware Coastal Airport. Last week, Jim and I were at a meeting up in Dover Downs. The official name is the Delaware Business Aviation Association, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, and at that meeting, they actually formally presented the new name, brand, et cetera.
and everyone in that room was just amazed and thought we were spot on. Thankful for John Martin, president of PATS, that stood up and publicly also shared those sentiments. So again, you know, we've done a lot of hard work, and now a lot of the hard work now begins. And that's specifically going and figuring out as far as the signage perspective, the technical stuff Jim's sharing. We definitely have looked at key identifiers that we'd like to hone in on, but the first step in the process is the FAA piece. So we're already geared up, hoping to have an official event celebration. Hopefully, will be the Friday of Wings and Wheels. We've teed up a tentative meeting already with the Wings and Wheels committee for next week, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Yes, sir.
Melanie?
Yes, sir.
I don't know whether I was looking at abstract or what. I was trying to figure out whether I was looking at a shark or a plane.
It works.
That's right.
It's intentional.
Well, I think it should be a plane myself. But, I mean, what's that?
Looks like a fish to me.
Yeah.
So, and that's a great comment. I'm not sure if everyone's seen it. I should have brought this, but essentially,
yeah.
And I'm happy to pass it around. You make a great comment. This could be a flying fish. And when it was originally designed, we thought, well, maybe the edges were too sharp for the shark, so those edges got rounded out, so it kind of looks like an airplane. It looks like water, you know, nice water, beach water, pretty sun.
So is it abstract or not?
Is it abstract? It's interesting. It looks like a plane to me, but perhaps, you know, it's contemporary for sure. But it does bring those elements from our airport and the beach and sunshine and all of that.
Because I've had some people call me.
And they say that it looks like a shark.
They don't like it.
Okay.
Depending on what you think it is, that tells us how much therapy you really need.
In 62, I went to World's Fair. I went in the art. Oh, my goodness. Look at all these paintings. I'm thinking, I'm no painter, but I can throw paint on the wall, too. And that's what I thought of when I seen that. That looks to me like abstract. I'm not sure what it is. That's what it's going to be.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I have
got to work close to the airport.
A little behind, so I just got a question. What was the purpose of changing the name from Sussex to Delaware Coast Guard?
The intent of all the investments that have been made is actually to grow the airport. You know, you've had the 500 foot extension. The goal is to go another 500 feet, from 5,500 to 6,000. And in order for that to happen, there has to be a road realignment. But in the meantime, with the growth from 5,000 to 5,500 square feet, has enabled this airport to attract larger jets in. But we also want to attract also more tourists as well as business people. And to be frank with you, a lot of people may not be aware of, and particularly outside this market area.
Just to project more of a regional airport theme than a local airport.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And it's not just that they're wanting to do it here. I see it going on all over the country. We go every weekend. I'm in a different city, in a different town. And that's why I see that a lot of people are doing this kind of thing, trying to project their airports more on a regional basis. And that, you know, that projected perception is reality. And that is very true, you know, in aviation. Perception is reality. So you create the perception, and that becomes a reality in the minds of a lot of people, business, industry, travel, tourism, everywhere. More of a regional airport. I saw the same thing going down to Punta Gorda, Florida. When they, you know, a few years ago, they started talking about doing the same kind of thing. Good golly, go down there now and see what all is going on. I like the logo. I'm sorry.
I guess I'm going to have to. Somebody called me. So what am I going to tell them they're looking at? We don't know.
We're looking at an airplane.
Airplane. Okay. It
could be a combination of fish indicating close to
fish,
water.
I'm going to tell them what was said. And
they're
walking
a coastal
water.
An ocean image. You know,
a Wait, flying out of the coast.
Just tell him Jeff Reed is right.
That's
so three things. Our plane, and it could be a fish, and it's coastal water.
Absolutely right.
Okay, three things.
That's absolutely right.
Okay.
And I also wanted to share on last Tuesday's county council presentation. I was always also happy that Gus Kroll presented as well as Garrett here, Georgetown Air Services, and they did a phenomenal job. So.
What was the name that I was questioning? It was,
what, you were,
it was the logo.
No, and that's fine. I'd be happy to.
Because I sort of thought it would be a plane.
And I'm looking to see if there's something in this press release that might just address that specifically.
There was something in one of the write-ups that did talk about the logo essentially being nautical or associated with the ocean.
With the ocean.
Combination aviation nautical theme, yeah.
If I'm pulling my airplane out, it looks like an airplane. If I'm going out of Lewis Inlet, I think it's a fish. I think that's the effect.
Well, it's got to come here to New Jersey. So we know not to hire for a pilot.
And that is my update. Any other questions or thoughts?
What's your immediate next step?
So, other than the technical piece of it, we are specifically figuring out timeline. We really want to work on getting signage. So it's signage inside the airport, you know, as far as the terminal, but also the big signs out, and then Jim's going to get in touch with DelDOT on the signs that we think can be within a three mile or so perimeter. But we're identifying what signs, first of all, and that's the short term. The goal would be to have all the signage completed by Wings and Wheels, but right now we have to identify the sign, then we have to get quotes from a couple of sign companies, and then Wings and Wheels certainly, and an airport display, and we've got a whole cadre of action items to work on.
But you're going to...
Wings and Wheels is Saturday, October the 3rd.
Todd's intention is you're going to see that flying fish everywhere.
on
buildings here at the airport. They'll be part of our direction signs out on the highways, kind of like the seagull for the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. Trying to figure out how they get away with all that stuff. And so we're working on that.
Well, they make the rules, so.
We've also talked about, you know, a new website. There's a lot of pressure building up behind this FAA notification to us that's really okay. You know, as soon as they give us that, you're going to see a lot of things happen, and it's all good.
How can I get this logo, the entire logo for my new website?
Can I give both of them to you to share with the committee? That's fine. Whatever format, whether it's JPEG or PDF, or just send it to me in multiple formats. Can I read what it states? Yes, sir, please do. It says name and logo. An airplane that evolves the likeness of a fish sweeping across the sunset and surf.
There you go.
I'm gonna cry.
Can that logo be released publicly yet?
Yes.
We're releasing it. We're still working on, you know, what's the color number for each one of those different colors, that kind of thing, so everybody's got the same one. And mm-hmm. But yeah, it's out there in several places.
Was it all right for us to go ahead and change
yes,
it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, as soon as Susan sends it out, we'll have it. What happened to your wrist? Susan beat you up.
I keep telling people it was too much vacuuming, and I can't do that anymore.
Do we have any other comments or questions on the branding initiative? All right. Wildlife management update, Jim?
Oh, there's not a whole lot going on. Yeah, it's nothing much going on. we'll leave it at that. Let's
hit any problems with the wildlife moths. Buzzards seem to increase their population. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're only running in New York. I don't move fast enough. All right, no comments on that.
No, I mean, I haven't had any deer on the runway. I haven't even had big flocks of seagulls like we used to have. You know, one time out here on takeoff, we went through a flock of seagulls and they had to come back and knock out some the place where I had panels and plunged in the bombardier's nose of the airplane. It went big mess. Mm.
The end of June is the end of our permit to do anything with goose nests or eggs. Which, you know, it's past that time anyway, so that part of the year is over. We were pretty successful with taking care of some nests and eggs, and there were some that we missed that almost got run over when I was out there going through the grass, but the little baby geese, but I missed them.
Yeah. So were they ducklings? Just geese?
Just geese.
Okay.
Airport update.
All righty, here we go. Already talked about the name change. We finished repaving Baltimore Avenue this weekend. We did from Anacoke Avenue, the main road, into the industrial park, about halfway up Baltimore Avenue. I thought it came out looking pretty nice. Go past your other place and see if the grass will grow. We also completed the milling and paving on Taxiway A South, is what we're calling it. From the main ramp down to runway 4. I thought that came out pretty nice as well.
Very nice.
We are, as part of that project, we're gonna do some crack sealing that I already talked to Mark about, but we'll let people, it's gonna happen here on the concrete, or not concrete ramp, the corporate taxi lane. That'll affect some of you guys that are back there that we'll let you know about. Instrument approaches. The VOR approach to runway 4, right now you can't legally use it until November 17th. However, I'm told that in the December 10th publication, it's going to go away completely. And that is because of the Salisbury VOR radials being unreliable in the area.
I read the notice that
we need to do that. There's apparently some new criteria for how they design approaches, and there's no way to meet that criteria. The other thing is the Salisbury VOR is going to go away in a couple of years, so they're not. Yeah, it's on the list. Nobody's really fighting for it at Salisbury.
We all fight for it. I mean, that's 9 out of 10 times that's the approach that I use to come in.
Mm-hmm.
What I
am looking for is a straight in approach someplace else with a, you know, that doesn't rely on a feeder fix like Salisbury. So if you come across any of that, I've been looking, I can't find it, but I know I've seen approaches just relies on one VOR, and you know, maybe we can do something with that. But if you happen to come across one of those with the, you know, just a straight in or a holding in lieu of or something that.
Why couldn't we use the Waterloo with DME?
Well, that's what I'm saying is, for some reason they're not thinking of that. And I'm trying to find an example that would. Well, these guys do it. Why can't we? So
they can do it at DME. Chester, DME too.
Chester, Connecticut, comes off of Middletown, VOR, and DME.
Well, if you think it's just let me know.
Okay.
We're still working on our LPV minimums for the GPS to runway 4. The survey data that we've been having problems getting approved finally got approved. So now the whole thing's with the flight procedures people getting the LPV minimum back. I'm told it'll take a few publication cycles. So I don't know what that means. Publication cycles every 56 days. So you know, hopefully by the end of this year we're gonna get that back. That's something I'd follow up on probably once a week. So see what we can do there. we've talked about our big electrical upgrade project of new vaults, new lighting for Taxiway B, some new Delmarva power out there that's going to help a lot of people. We put the Taxiway B replacement out for bids and opened bids last week. Tudor Electric was a low bidder at over $262,000. So that is going to be all dependent on getting an FAA grant, which we'll be putting the application in next week for that.
That's and just for Taxiway lights?
The grant will cover two things. One is the replacement of the Taxiway B lights. And you know, and all the cabling and controls and everything, and then another part of that is the Delmarva power, running electrical power out through the middle of the airfield, and then splitting it over to where the new vaults are going to be.
Okay.
And then another part of that that's not going to be covered under the grant that Delmarva power is paying for, will extend the power from the middle of the field where they did the switch over to the other side of the industrial park, so they've got a redundant loop kind of a system there that will take care of a lot of problems. So that's our big project right now. The engineering department's putting a lot of effort into that, and as soon as we get the grant, we'll know better on when that's going to happen. It will involve a runway shutdown, probably one day. Actually, I think we're doing it at night. When they bore under the runway with the cables. So.
Runway 422.
Yeah. And I think it also affects 1028, but we won't do them both at the same time, obviously. A few weeks ago, I was at the American Association of Airport Executives Conference. Annual conference was the big to-do. It was up in Philadelphia this year, about 2,000 people. They always get a lot of good keynote speakers. This year was Mary Matlin and James Carville, which was pretty interesting. Ed Rendell, the Secretary of Transportation. It's airport management people, but they always seem to get the politicians and the secretary level type people to come and speak. One of the things they talked about was the FAA's reauthorization. The FAA's authorization runs out at the end of September. They don't expect it to be reauthorized by the end of September, so we're going to be back to where we were a few years ago, if you remember that, where, you know, 6-month continuing resolutions to keep the thing going. What that means for us is uncertainty with funding for our grant projects. So we'll see what that does. You know, they go 6 months, they don't know if they have to act like that. There's no money coming after the 6 months, basically. So it's gets pretty confusing. Was at a session on airport compliance. They had the FAA's director of compliance there, along with a guy who's probably one of the biggest names in aviation law. And they discuss airports and compliance, something that this committee gets involved with our policies and stuff. One of the things that they talked about, the FAA is going to put out a hangar use policy, and I don't know if they're putting it out for comments by the end of September or if the policy is going to be out. Some of the things that they're going to be in that, they're going to look at, their intention is, because it's out for comment or will be out for comment, is that hangars should be primarily used for aeronautical purposes. And that kind of goes along with the policy that we adopted. You know, the primary use is aeronautical. You got room for something else, that's fine, as long as you're using it for an aeronautical activity. If there's no waiting list, you could use it for something else, even, you know, a non-aeronautical use. A lot of airports out west that are seasonal run into this problem where there's nobody there during the winter. They'd like to rent it out, you know, make a little bit of money doing something else, and then reopen it in the springtime. That'll be okay. They will expect us to get fair market value rent for any non-aeronautical use. and then have a policy where, you know, if somebody does show up and say, I've got an airplane, I'd like to rent that hangar that you're using for a self-storage unit, you know, you can convert it. The other thing that they addressed was, and we talked about this, was aircraft construction. They consider aircraft construction to be aeronautical use only in the final assembly stages. And this applies to PATS as well. Building tanks to them is not aeronautical activity. Putting the tanks in the airplane is aeronautical activity. So if you've bought a kit that you're going to build an airplane, it gets dropped off at your hangar, that's not aeronautical activity until the final assembly. I don't have a definition of final assembly, but that was their policy. The other thing they talked about is, and this is going to happen soon, but I don't have any kind of dates, is we're going to be required to do compliance planning. You know, we have 39 grant assurances, which are basically the things that we need to comply with, plus all the advisory circulars and everything that go with that. But we'll be required to have a plan for how we're going to comply with each one of those. So that'll be coming out. They're also hoping to have leasing standards out for comment early next fiscal year, so the end of this calendar year. So we'll be looking for that. They're also going to put out a temporary airport closure policy for comment by the end of the calendar year. You know, right now, if we wanted to close 1028 and use it for parking for Wings and Wheels, let's say, we would have to get FAA approval to do that, and there's a big process. They're looking at that policy and how to give more control to the airports, you know, give airports general guidance and let the airports do their thing. The big thing that they bring up was airports are going to do that, have to be compensated for closing that part of the airfield. Overall, with the compliance, even though they're putting out all these policies, they really are moving more towards just putting out general policies, let the airports run their airports. So I had a good feeling about that. Any questions on?
What I've seen from some of the initial reading about that, there was a lot of people out there who love to argue. As soon as they see FAA want to do anything, they want to start an argument. Mm-hmm. But FAA is actually, from what I was reading, trying to loosen the reins a little bit on some mm-hmm. of the rules.
That was my impression.
And make some of them a little bit more sensible.
Yep. One of the comments that I heard was, you know, somebody has a table in their hangar, you know, they don't want to get into, well, is he storing it or does he use it for reading his maps before he goes and flies? You know,
that's of nonsense that some airports have used against.
And the FAA wants to stay out of that. So, like I said, they want to give some broad guidance to make sure that they're meeting their legal requirements to provide a safe aeronautical system for the country. And
well, there was a case where someone had put a calendar up. They tacked a calendar on the wall of their hangar, and the airport manager was trying to get rid of them, cancel the lease because it was non-aeronautical activity. And they used the hangar. It's just that kind of nonsensical, stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. Put a calendar up. They're not supposed to make any modifications or hang anything on the wall, et cetera. So that's just going into absurdity. Did you read about that case, Jim? Was that west somewhere?
I was going to say, it was about a year ago.
Yeah, about a year ago, was that west somewhere?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Well,
so
sure
somebody
was.
They were looking for a reason.
But they were using FAA rules.
Yeah.
With a strict enforcement and interpretation of rules to do something.
They also talked about each FAA region has to do two land use inspections every year. You know, basically, you know, are they complying with the land use requirements, you know, looking at leases and that kind of thing. And they'll go out and inspect airports. They found things like a tilapia farm in one of the hangars, people using a hangar as a daycare center, I mean, it's...
Eat your fire.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's... we worry about little things, but, I mean, there's people that see a lot of stuff.
We were out of compliance today, didn't you? We were doing management leadership training with Dell Dot down at night. I guess we were out of compliance.
Daycare center make you think of that? Is that what,
what's that?
Daycare center, did that make you think of that?
There we go. He's on a roll tonight, I'm telling you.
Okay. I went to another session. It was called the General Aviation Airport of the Future. One of the big things that they talked about was unmanned aircraft systems, or UASs. Right now, the FAA's official position is, by law, any aircraft that operates in the national airspace system has to have a certificated, has to be a certificated and registered aircraft, have a licensed pilot, and have operational approval from the FAA. That includes small unmanned aircraft. And they've been tasked now for a few years to figure out how to safely operate those systems within the national airspace system. And I keep saying UAS because that's kind of the new buzzword. Unmanned aircraft system. They look at not just the vehicle, the UAV, but also the person operating it. The guidance system, maybe satellites or something else. You know, the maintenance, everything that goes with that. They still consider model aircraft to be in a separate category from all that. I noticed your hat there. So what they're looking at is. You know, the non-hobby, non-recreational use of unmanned aircraft. They're
so,
in the...
So they don't have to be certificated if they stay below 700 or 1200 outside the...
Well, I'll get to that. Okay. It's part of the law that directed the Secretary of Transportation to figure this out. There's this thing called Section 333, which covers all that. Which directs him to figure out how aircraft, unmanned aircraft, can operate safely within the national airspace system. So there, while he's figuring those things out, he's allowed to give these certificate of exemptions from that section, and they're called certificates of exemption or certificates of authorization, COAs or COAs. And you've probably heard some of that, maybe. Basically, you have to prove to the administrator of the FAA that you can operate safely. You get a certificate that says you can operate this piece of equipment doing this type of work in this place. And some people are doing that. But they're going to issue a new Part 107 to the FARs that'll cover the small... unmanned air vehicles. There's this notice of proposed rulemaking that's out for comment. That's how they do things in the federal government. And I do have kind of a summary of what all these new rules are, if anybody's interested. Right now, the model aircraft people, and tell me where I'm wrong here, but they kind of let them self-regulate themselves with, I guess there's an American modeling, you know what I'm talking about? The Model Aircraft Association of America, something like that, that kind of keeps track of everybody. You can operate less than 55 pounds, under 400 feet above the ground. If you're within 5 miles of an airport, you have to let the airport know that you're going to be flying there, and... You know, you kind of work out something to keep everybody safe. It's just notification. The new rules for, like I said, non-hobby, non-recreational use, they'll allow up to 500 feet, which the AAA position is, give us back that 100 feet, put them back down to 400 feet. It'd be airport approval instead of airport notification. So anybody that wants to fly a quadcopter around here, you know, to do farming, is going to need approval from the airport, and I'm not sure how that's going to affect us. Who's, you know, how we're going to do that approval, but We'll see if that stays in. You'll have to be 17 years old and take a knowledge test of on operating. There's no flight test involved. So you're gonna have people that have never flown anything, flying things now, and no test to see if they really know how to fly. And plus, none of this is gonna apply to the model aircraft, the hobby recreational use of these things.
It's commercial use.
Well, it's not just commercial use. If you're a real estate agent and you're using a quadcopter to take pictures of your properties, even though you're not charging anybody, that's still a non-hobby, non-recreational use.
Right.
So that'll be covered by that. So there's a lot of things coming out about this. There is a big tidal wave building up behind this decision that, you know, as soon as it's made, you know, these things are going to hit the market. People are going to be out there doing it. The first use of it is not going to be Amazon dropping off packages at your house. It's going to be precision farming. It's going to be mostly agricultural uses. So, you know, all these farms that we got around our airport, you know, that's going to have an impact. You know, some of the other things that people are thinking about is right now you have to be in a visual line of sight with your UAV. They're looking at how do you go to beyond visual line of sight to where, you know, it takes off in front of you and then you lose sight of it and you're still able to control it and it flies back to you. Plus, you know, the remote operations of you're sitting in an office someplace flying a quadcopter over somebody's farm that's 20 miles away or wherever, you know, outside of the country even. So, you know, how does that impact us? Plus, you know, everybody thinks of the little quadcopters, but they're going to be UAVs that require a runway. They're big enough that they're going to have a runway to take off and land from. So we may see some of those one of these days. One of the other things they brought up in this airport of the future thing is flying cars, which sounds, you know, kind of Buck Rogers. It's out there.
Hey, they're out there now.
There are two models that you can buy later on this year. You can put your orders in today. Terrafugia, I guess the company, one takes off vertically, the other takes off with a runway. It needs about 1,700 feet. These vehicles will fit in your garage. They'll fit in a standard parking space. So, you know, we start talking about policies.
There's one in Germany now, too, that they saw the videos. They're going out in worldwide production.
And they've been around since the 30s. They said the first one was called the Curtiss Aero Car. It was a triplane. I haven't been able to find a picture of it. But
Kermit Weeks has one.
Really?
Yep.
Jim, it sounds like in the future we're going to have a lot of things up in the air with a potential for a collision.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of things that I'm sure they haven't thought about yet.
Yeah, right. I mean, when you go out and put all these things together.
But, you know, what do we do?
And not in sight.
The flying car will end up being under the same regulations as an aircraft.
Yeah.
Because once it leaves the ground, it's an aircraft.
Right.
We saw something come in here Monday afternoon, kind of like in Dayton. It wasn't right here at the airport. It was maybe about 5 miles to the northwest of here. I don't know what it was, but it was something up in the air. It was too small to be a manned airplane, but too big to be just some little model airplane. It may have been giant scale, somebody flying, whatever, but we were down to cruise altitude, which was 1,100, 1,200 foot. I hear all of a sudden just big monstrous looking, probably an RC controlled aircraft. But he was 1,100 foot, he went down 500 foot. It took an invasive move just to keep hitting the thing.
You can climb up to 2,600 feet.
What's that?
You go up with.
Somebody was flying it and
how do you
thought about coming back around and taking a pass at it.
Load the 50 cal?
No, the weight turbulence off of B-25 will do a lot of.
But even with the RCs, I mean, there's no method of telling how high you're flying. You know, when you're sitting there flying, I've not seen any RCs that have the ability to tell you the altitude.
You can get a what now the technology they have, you can have it right on your radio, on your transmitter to tell you exactly how high you are.
We had an issue. We had some students from Cape Henlopen come out. They were going to take some pictures for us. They have a quadcopter that their photography class was going to use. Came out here on the ramp, and the thing wouldn't fly. It said, sorry, I'm at an airport. I'm not allowed to fly, and it wouldn't start. So,
that's true. We're not allowed to fly near, well, you said 5 feet.
No, it's built into the controls of the quadcopter, though. Yeah. They have GPS built into them now.
There's a guy in all club, the Lewis RC Club. They have all their GPS with a pop top. They have to have a special plane they fly off of, otherwise something GPS not working properly. It's too much technology for me.
Yes.
Has anybody seen the keychain drone? What's that?
Mm-hmm.
It's about that big room. That's how small it is. It's got a 500-foot capability.
Wow.
I saw a guy in Okeechobee. The airport of Okeechobee, mm-hmm. He was teaching his kids how to fly, and it's a keychain.
There is a category of UAVs called micro UAVs. They're less than 4.4 pounds, and probably what you're talking about.
It's ridiculous.
But they're going to be, like Richard said, they're going to be everywhere, and if we get down to where the airport has to approve all that. You know, we're talking policies, and this committee may get involved. So,
now, is the FAA looking for the owners of the airports, in this case the county, to be regulating, or are they looking to be the regulators? In other words, is the FAA regulations going to require the owners to regulate, or is the FAA going to require themselves to regulate?
Well, a lot of the regulations are what I just passed around. As far as operating certificates and and actually you can go on the FAA website's got a bunch of stuff on there, but I'll send that to you.
But Jim, I mean, there's still a lot to be approved and discussed about this.
Yeah, you have to be vetted by the TSA. If you're a realtor, taking pictures of houses, you got to go through the TSA now. If it stands, you'll have to get the airport's approval to fly around here. It wouldn't be just here. Airports like Laurel and every place else. It's not just county airports. It's airports.
I went to a wedding and had somebody with one of those gyrocopters or whatever that took the pictures. From a couple hundred feet as the bride and groom came down. Ooh, that was all that.
There are airports that are using the quadcopters to chase the birds, look for wildlife, and we're looking at the potential for using it here for that.
At our last Wings and Wheels, not the last Wings and Wheels, but the one before it, Linda had someone approach her about doing some marketing, photography, using a quadcopter drone, mm-hmm. Airport. And I said, well, you're going to have to go through some channels to do that.
Well, at Wings and Wheels, too, we've had some of the RC model clubs want to fly the aircraft. I've been very hesitant to even allow anything like a radio. We are not operating under terms of a waiver. We're not getting a waiver. If we had a waiver going, when we close the airport and put a dedicated time to fly about that, it would be one thing. But when the airport is open for normal operation during the entire event, then you can't run stuff like that.
I don't know if that guy contacted or Linda talked to you about it yet, but just a heads up.
So these things all sound like they're way out there in the future, but flying cars and drones and everything, but
they're here.
They're here.
Future is here.
There are six, I forget what they call them, centers of excellence or something that the FAA has approved. Places that all over the country that are doing research on how to integrate these systems with the airspace system, and one of them is actually around here. They were doing some testing at Cape May, operating drones in the pattern with aircraft and stuff, and so it's out there. The other airport of the future thing, which this is probably a lot farther away for us, the did a presentation on remote towers. You know, eventually, I'm hoping we get to the point where we start thinking about whether we need a control tower or not. It's going to be a while, but talking about a...
I mean,
it's nice without it, but, you know, eventually, you know...
I don't know what the FAA's threshold is to look at that.
Well, an airport even as busy as Cassini, the airport manager was actually fudging the numbers to be able to keep this control tower.
Well, New Smyrna, Flagler, Orman, all those just got put back in, and I don't think they're real happy that they did it now that they look back at it.
I don't know. But there's two places right now that are being tested, and basically all it is a tower with a series of cameras that gives a 360-degree view. And it's the same thing that the air traffic controller would see, except he's someplace else. And it's a lot cheaper than manning the tower and building a tower. But they're able to, with the way the camera technology is, they're able to follow vehicles and aircraft on the ground, and in the air, and it was kind of amazing, but it's just a future thing I thought you'd be interested in.
I don't think it's an awesome future.
Someday. That was about it. Then the only other gee whiz thing was the Paris Air Show this year, they did have jetpacks being demonstrated, so those are
making a comeback.
The article I read made a big deal out of it that, you know, it's closer than we think.
Jim, the only thing you mentioned there or I'm concerned really, maybe with the VOR4 going away. That's you know, when some of the worst weather's around here is the winds are coming off of low pressure, which is off the Maryland and Virginia coast, and we're getting the moisture off the coast, and the winds are off the coast, and I personally don't like circling at 500, 600 feet, you know, I mean, have the straight in approach. So we really need to fight to keep that in some form. Pop out of the clouds at 600 feet. There's not a whole lot of time to react.
Mm-hmm. This one, I mean, we won the Waterloo battle, but I don't think we'd win this one, keeping Salisbury.
And I'm not saying keep Salisbury. I'm just saying we need to find an alternative to keep that VOR4, whether it's VOR.
Well, so I'm asking you help. I mean, look at as you're flying along, if you see one of those approaches that only needs one VOR, you know, that's in the same kind of configuration as ours, where you're flying towards the VOR and it's not on the field. And
I just flew one of those somewhere. I'm trying to remember where it was.
Yeah. I know Chester or in Connecticut. I just flew that one.
But it did say radar required.
We have Dover,
which I thought was odd for
VOR. Yeah, but the VOR4 would be on the edge of their airspace. Usually I get just a few miles south of here and they're already handing me off.
I'm just saying it. The majority of the times I come in when it's bad weather, it is VOR4 that the winds are favoring.
Yeah.
And if we don't have the VOR4...
You don't have GPS capability.
I know several people that don't.
I've got Garmin 496 and V25. I've got 430 in the Comanche, but it's still not for approach. It's just for in route. So there are a lot of people that still don't have the full capability.
So and the other thing that's going to do too is it's going to reduce the people that want to do practice approaches. They want to come in and use this, which generates customers for fuel, for maintenance, and for the restaurant.
Yeah.
So,
I understand all that. It's just we have asked for a waiver to be able to redesign the approach a little bit outside of the normal standards, and got turned down. So, they keep throwing this next gen stuff at me with the VOR is going away and GPS thing in the future.
It's got to be something to do with their new criteria, because I can think of a lot of different approaches that just the one VOR, VOR, VOR Alpus, for example. You might come into the runway at an angle, but it's going to get you in there.
Yeah, or an ILS. Coming next to runway extension.
Mm-hmm. ILS is even less likely. So.
Well,
well, I mean, that's because it's the counties and the maintenance and the cost. But, you know, if we want to get aircraft in there, we want to generate business and maintain mm-hmm. business, we change the name and, you know, we go to that expense. We want to keep the business coming in any way they can.
It would be nice to have a precision approach.
If we had an ILS, we would generate a lot more traffic.
We'll have the LPV back. And the way the FAA does ILS decisions is they look at the benefit versus the cost, which there is a cost to them, so it's not like we can write them a check. They do a benefit-cost analysis for the benefit they get versus the cost they put in from the time that the ILS would be put in until we have a GPS approach. So we already have the GPS approach, so there's no benefit, and it's all cost.
What's the I don't understand what the benefit is to the FAA. How the plus column even what goes into that. So I'm just saying that
from multiple pilots that are based here, we're going to be very concerned about the VOR-4 going away.
Well,
find me one of those approaches. That's my next step.
They'll do a notice of proposed rulemaking.
Sorry?
They'll do an NPR?
For
that. For eliminating that VOR approach?
No.
No? They just drop it. They'll give you a chance for comments or anything.
Initial approach fixes for 4 is Salisbury. What else is there? I don't know what's coming across Salisbury, so I don't really pay attention to that. Is Lowry an initial approach fix?
Yes.
So Salisbury doesn't have to be there. You don't have to have the cross radials off of Salisbury as we use it today. I mean, this is
It's a VOR, not a VOR DME. So it's you got to use the Salisbury radials as your different points.
Mm-hmm.
Just a minute, I'll bring up the approach right now.
Because it has DME limitations on it. If you took Salisbury away, it'd have to be a VOR DME.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use VOR quarter loop, one VOR, and use DME.
Blades.
Legally.
Blades, the final approach fix, and that also requires radio.
That's my next plan.
Well, here's VOR-4. It requires the 08 degree radio off the Salisbury to identify Lowry intersection. Here's this, Jeff.
21.6 DME, though.
We got
he's
it.
Got the 21.6 DME. So, I mean, it's an argument that we can, conversation we can have later. I mean, but it's a high concern because multiple pilots that I'm aware of that uses the VOR approach.
Yeah.
Just let that be noted.
Well, like I said, I mean, I've done everything that I requested the waiver, got turned down. The next step is, let's design a different approach, and I'd like to have something that here's an approach just like the same conditions that we have. It's based off of single VOR. Why can't we do this? So if you can find me one of those, I'm going to keep looking. But if you know of someplace, I'll look at Chester. But
Daytona, VOR 16.
Might say thanks for telling us we're going to take rid of
that
one too. We missed that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was my update. So.
All right.
I mean, the biggest, going back on one last statement, the biggest argument that is safety, because I don't think the community, the airport, or the pilots want to be circling their low, you know, coming in off a 2-2 and then having a circle. So.
That's a pilot's decision then. If it's not safe, you don't do it.
I understand that, Jim, but I'm saying if you're going down to 600 and some feet, circle, 680, the circle, then, you know, I personally don't like that, and I have to make that pilot decision, but Rick may not make the same decision I make. He may circle, and then next thing you know, you're 500, 600 feet above the house. if it's a circus. I don't think that's going to be a good thing. It's going to force us to do more of it where we would be using the other folks, is my point. So I'm done. Thank you.
Rick will fly the RNAF. All right. Wings and Wheels, Larry.
So for Friday, we did get an invitation day. It's coming together really well. The problem we're going to have is squeezing everybody into what we've got. The highlight speaker will be astronaut Joe Edwards. He is confirmed, rain, shine, or whatever. He's confirmed he'll be over here. And if the weather's good, he can bring a ticket one day and stay and play the next day. Otherwise, he's going to drive over. Those of you don't know Joe, he's when he was in the Navy, he was fighter pilot of the year in 4 different years. Test pilot school graduate, helped develop, helped expand the envelope of the F-14 Tomcat. Was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross for getting a disabled F-14 back on aircraft carrier, a feat that was almost impossible when part of the airplane came off. He got back, even though he'd lost an eye and an arm and broke his collarbone. And no avionics, no radios, whole radar missing off the airplane, still got it on. But anyway, he's awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross for that. And of course, he's another good old Alabama farm boy like me that went to Auburn University. But
that doesn't hurt, right?
That doesn't hurt anything. I just made a hero in my eyes. But commander of the space shuttle, the space station here. You know, he's a very, very distinguished aviator to be coming and talking about, you know, how an Alabama farm boy, you know, reached the pinnacle of his aviation career. Retired from NASA now and has his own aviation consulting business. And then for that evening, the Friday night, we've already hired the big band, you know, 40-style big band. The Abbott Costello guys are coming back to do their full routine. They were a huge hit last year. Similar dinner, which, you know, last year we finally found the right combination for having, you know, dinner that everybody would enjoy. Dick Cole is, every time I see him, he wants to make sure we're still invited to come in October, so he will be coming and join us and celebrating his 100th birthday just a week before, or a couple of weeks before that. But don't worry about his endurance. You'll still be going long after all you want to go home and go to bed. when we flew the Congressional Gold Medal last month, we went to the Air Force Museum. I mean, 2 o'clock in the morning, Dick, we got to go to bed. Can't keep going. And then Saturday, it's going to be, you know, very similar to what we've done in past years, except the venue is growing to the point that now we have people calling us, you know, can I come, can I come? So we may have the, you know, problem that we're afraid of is where to park everybody and become maybe a little more selective with parking. We have a very limited amount of parking space out here. And do not want to start parking, you know, on the other side where the ramp is, because we just don't want, I don't like the idea of having people walking back and forth across the taxiway. So we'll just try to make it all work with the space we got on this side. I guess that's pretty much the bulk of it. We do need, you know, Rick is handling the volunteers, and we need all the volunteers we can find to come help, especially on setup on Friday and breakdown on Saturday night, because Saturday night, if we leave this airfield, it's got to be turned back into an airport. And Saturday morning, you know, at sunrise, we got to turn it into the event, meaning we got to get all the barricades up, barriers and ropes and all these kind of things. You know, we do not put any of that stuff up Friday night, except for back in the parking area, because your pilot's coming in here at night. We don't want to put anything up there that anybody could run into. So first thing, daylight on Saturday morning, we need all the volunteers we can find, prisoners and everybody else, to get everything set up. And then same thing on Saturday night. Our biggest problem has been Saturday night. Everybody's had a good time all day, and they've had fun, and they've been out in the sun, and all of a sudden everybody leaves, and Linda and I and Matt and Rob Donzie and a couple of others wind up having to, you know, stay here until late at night, and, you know, taking the place down and putting everything back, turning it back into an airport. So one of our biggest needs, if anybody knows anybody, you know, help us Saturday night, right, Rick?
Yeah, we're working on that, so.
Yeah. We had the female inmates, but we're still looking at doing the inmate.
We'd love to have them, but they got to be here on time. You know, and the problem with the inmates on Saturdays is the work release people, and they don't show up out there until about 7 o'clock. And they don't get here until around 8 o'clock, and that's too late. So Saturday morning, having a prisoner show up, you know, to do setup at 8 o'clock in the morning is no good. We have to be set up, you know, a couple of hours before that. We had cars coming in here with a full train last year, and we didn't have the barricades set up.
For the cones.
We can't depend on the prisoners for Saturday morning setup. Now, we've got to have people here at sunrise, even before sunrise, to start getting setup done, because the cars start showing up at sunrise.
Are we putting a limit on the cars? I know, not last year, but the year before, the cars pretty
well.
Well,
we run out of space. We run out of space. You know, some of the guys who didn't like that, well, get out of bed and get here earlier. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
But the people who are really serious about it, you know, they start getting out of here. They start showing up at sunrise. They get the trailers, and once they get the trailers, start bringing the cars in. And the problem last year that just had me literally pulling my hair out and screaming and shouting at people was we had all, everything's going on, people starting to arrive, and we're still trying to get set up. You know, that's something we got to do a better job with this year. So anyway, that's what Rick is just doing a phenomenal job.
No,
with
but,
Linda,
yeah.
You know, with setting up this big, massive spreadsheet that's going to have everybody's duties and everybody involved in any kind of leadership role will have a copy of that. So everybody will know what everybody else is doing and what everybody's roles are, and they'll be a little bit more organized in that manner.
And yeah, hopefully every year gets a little better. We learned from our mistakes last year. But if anybody knows of any groups that would be willing to come out and help us, doesn't matter what time. I mean, if they have some time available, have them contact me or Larry or me if you can, but just get a hold of one of us. And we'll get the word to the
great thing about
right
volunteers, we feed them.
Yep.
We feed them great. Hot dogs and hamburgers and potato salad and sodas. And we have a nice hospitality here for volunteers. They'll find it. We recognize it's definitely make the event go. Can't make it go without them. But, you know, the prisoners on Friday is great because that's the regular prisoners. They come out at 7 o'clock. And we're not under the time constraints on Friday. Saturday, you know, that's been a problem for the last couple of years.
Okay, we'll talk.
Well, I don't have any more to offer.
But we have a choice. I'll take the female prisoners on Friday over the male. The male guys, they're out there trying to show off to each other and hoot and holler and carrying on. The ladies get right to it and do a good job.
Is that it, Larry?
Oh, that's the bulk of it.
Okay. All right. New business. Anybody with new business to present? There being none, then we'll move on to public comments.
For them as well as our airport. So, I'd just like to make it known that we are on that track from a standpoint of education. So.
Would it?
That's what makes it a real, you know, that's what really attracts people is A and B school.
Yeah.
A lot of people are not going to bother to go to just airframe or just power plant. We got to have both ready.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't know if it'll help you or not, but then I don't know if you coordinated with Jim or Susan as far as getting a copy of the logo to put on the new tripod.
Yeah.
But you have, I think.
I'd like, I'd like to use, obviously, as much of promo as possible, and obviously Melody knows me from way back.
Okay. I don't even have a cap, old or new.
I'll get you one.
Oh, okay.
It'll be a collector's item.
Hold on.
Yeah, so.
It's worth going into New York.
I thought you were just advertising.
This will go into your museum.
I thought you were just advertising that you've got your GED now.
Thank you. I'll take that master's.
Thank you very much. Ma'am, you had something?
Yeah, I had a couple of things. One is that the sun in our logo has to be the sunrise, because that's where the sun is of coastal Delaware.
Yeah, wouldn't be sunset, would it?
I mean, you can't talk about sunset, because it isn't sunset on water in Delaware. Okay, the other thing is the big pictures in the airport. When you go to an airport anywhere, you look for places to see when you visit the area. And some of the pictures in the airport are water in the dark of an old, worn-out dock. Nobody is coming to Sussex to look at water over a worn-out dock. I mean, we should have Kevin's pictures of boardwalk, farmer's market, beach, marina, fishing, you know, something happy and useful. They're two giant pictures of dark water, and they're not attractive. I mean, they're artistically beautiful. He's got one of them on the cover of one of his books. I mean, he loves that picture. But as far as marketing, we should have something cheerful for people to look forward to.
Kevin, you want? I think that's actually in the plans, I believe, isn't it?
No, actually, those are the new pictures. That's a good point.
Well, what about? I thought it was going to be a big screen TV.
Rotating
through images.
So
oh, yeah,
what
that
we have rotating. Thank you for your feedback. The artwork of Kevin Fleming, some of his very prolific artwork, and the whole image of that terminal is more of a coastal feel. Also, inside of our terminal is a new airport electronic display with which we're adding new content each and every week. We have exquisite B-roll video given to us courtesy of Southern Delaware Tourism that does highlight six of the towns throughout Sussex County. We also are promoting Wings and Wheels. If you happen to know, I've seen some beautiful shots there. Wings and Wheels actually taken from the website itself. We just added, thanks to Pat's, a 1-minute video of Pat's, very, very interesting, and we continue to add new content. And we have a nice scroll on the bottom, which comes from directly from Southern Delaware Tourism, promoting various events throughout Sussex. So, one step at a time.
So, should we be changing that, sweeping across the sunrise and surf instead of sunset? Is that what you're...
Sunrise, yeah.
Technically, right. It would be.
New beginning, a new sunrise.
Yeah, it's east, yeah.
Good point.
A very good point.
Sunrise.
Also, to champion on what she says there, you know, a lot of people that I run into, Melanie, that don't understand Delaware is a tax-free state. So, you know, something over the door, you're entering the tax-free state of Delaware, or something, you know, something that, because a lot of people are wrong.
I'm not sure what you said.
What happened if you bump the Siri button?
But I mean, you know, a lot of people come across the ferry because of that. You know, so it's something that we may already be doing, I'm not sure.
So, thank you, and the actual brand itself,
typically you look at a couple identifiers. So again, sun, the water, the actual airplane. I mean, you don't want to put too much in a brand and a logo. You want to, you know, titillate and get people interested as far as the actual dynamics of why people come to Delaware. You mentioned the tax-free. That's certainly components from an economic development perspective that is certainly one of the very first things we call.
All right. Any more comments from the public? Thank you very much for your input and feedback. Appreciate it. See. Next meeting date will be...
Are you breaking for the summer?
I'm all for that, but...
Well, I mean...
That's what we normally do.
I didn't...
You have to vote on it.
Didn't we have... Didn't we... I guess the rebranding is done, though. I mean, ordinarily we would have voted for the summer last month, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. No? That was June? Okay.
Well, also consider, the next normal meeting will be 22nd of July, right in the middle of Oshkosh.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be here. Jeff, will you be here? Are you going to Oshkosh?
No.
Rick, are you?
No, but...
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
Didn't the committee... set of precedents, they said that you would be dark July and August because of people traveling.
Yeah, last year, I think, wasn't it? If I'm not mistaken. It might have been the year before, but yeah, we've been doing that for at least
one
year.
Attendance problems. Yeah.
I mean, we're sitting here in June. If you do the 3-month count, that puts us in September anyway. I don't know if there's a great advantage to September prior to Wings and Wheels, Larry, what you're going to put there. I know my September.
No, our meetings with Wings and Wheels are starting to get really intense by then, but we don't really need anything out of this advisory committee.
So, do I hear a motion to break for until October?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
If nobody else has got it.
All in favor?
I'm
all for it. Aye. Set October's date.
4th.
28th. October 28th.
October 28th.
Are you doing September?
October.
Nope. They said October.
Did I second it?
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Watch what you
said. That's what was just suggested.
September.
That we wouldn't need to meet in September.
Normally we do meet in September. That's when we resume.
October.
Yeah. So, because we do every other month, so it's entirely up to you.
So if we met October, then we would have to meet in December.
Yeah. Right, and we normally combine in
December. You just want to get out of here.
Just tell me what you want.
No,
go back and make another motion.
Yeah, Susan makes a good point. We normally start back up in September.
Okay.
And our normal meeting schedule is every other month then.
Okay. All right.
Which will work well.
23rd.
23rd?
23rd.
But you got to vote on it.
I'll make that motion.
So I have a motion to resume to break until September 23rd. Mr. Wilson, you seconded it?
I did.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. September 23rd.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Power chill.
Jim, could you second?
With no further, if it, no one has any further business, can I have a motion to adjourn?
So your calendar.
I'll second that.
Larry and Jeff. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good